This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by a brand new all-natural daily preventative against a host of possible inflammatory issues. Black for Health liquid extract from Future Farm Botanicals. Black for Health combines four plant-based foods, black garlic, black radish root, black cumin seed, and black peppercorn, containing high levels of body-ready healing botanicals. It's a tasty supplement with liposome complex for optimal absorption. For more information or to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's myfuture, P-H-A-R-M. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman, and from now until September 15th, buy one bottle of Black for Health and get one bottle of Elderberry with Zinc and Echinacea, half off, at MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's podcast is all about mold, and this is a significant problem. Among the paradigms of natural medicine, I think this is one of the most challenging and elusive, because people who suffer from unexplained illness, you know, we look at their nutritional status, we look at their diets, we consider food allergy, we consider even chemical exposure. But mold toxicity is something that is A, very hard to identify. It is elusive, invisible, and very insidious, and it can be very challenging to treat. And so today we've invited a real expert on the subject. She's Dr. Jill Krista, spelled C-R-I-S-T-A. She's written a book called Break the Mold, 5 Tools to Conquer Mold and Take Back Your Health. And it's, you know, I just complimenting her, you know, prior to getting on the air, that the book is really great because it's, it boils down a lot of complex information into a, simple, action plan. And, this isn't easy. The, dealing with mold problems is really an art. And Dr. Jill, I think you've done a great job in, explaining it.
Thank you.
Yeah, first of all, give us a little background, because you're in addition to treating patients with mold problems, you yourself experienced mold problems, and in spite of your vast knowledge, it kind of caught you unawares.
Yes, it did. So first, thank you for having me on your podcast. It's really an honor. So I started in the world of natural medicine. I'm a naturopathic doctor, and I started in Wisconsin, so where I established my family practice. And I ended up seeing quite a bit of Lyme patients because we're in a Lyme endemic area. And I had a subset of patients that just were not getting better. And typically with naturopathic and functional medicine, when you're addressing the root cause, people get better. That's kind of the magic of it. And yet there is this group of people that just, they were doing everything right and not really seeing the gains that I was seeing in my other patients. And in one of those patients, they found black mold in his house. And it turns out it was a 12-year exposure. And it started to just make all the connections. I got into the research and I'm thinking, oh, that's why this guy's gut, you know, we can't get it in order, even though we're doing all the right gut stuff. That's why this guy has tinnitus. That's why this guy has urinary frequency and pelvic pain and insomnia and anxiety through the roof. That's actually reacts the wrong way to medication. You know, it was all of these things that, as I dug into the research, which there's quite a bit of animal research, not so much human, then I was able to kind of extrapolate that to him and started to see gains finally. And then I went to looking at these other patients and thought, I wonder if that's what's going on with them. And in almost every single case of the Lyme patients, the chronic Lyme patients that weren't getting better, they had either a past or a current mold exposure in their history that I had kind of glossed over because I thought of it as allergy, asthma, rashes.
And that's the conventional view of mold, is that it can be responsible for problems. Conventional allergists test for mold. They instruct their patients to dehumidify their homes or remediate problems. But typically, they're looking simply at respiratory symptoms. And but the symptoms of mold toxicity are legion, and it's more than just an allergy, right?
Yeah. So that's my mission, is to expand the definition of mold illness so that we're not looking at just the CDC defined IgE-mediated type reactions to the spores and the spore fragments, but also to think about, you know, what are the larger implications of those interactions of spores and spore fragments, and also these mycotoxins. And in my particular case, I know Dr. Shoemaker has a little different view on this, and I'm not a Shoemaker-trained doc. I was trained by naturopathic doctors, Dr. Walter Kernian and Lynn Patrick. And the view there is that, you know, the people that we're dealing with, and everybody has their selection bias by who comes in, but the majority of my patients that we're dealing with chronic illness, what I'm now calling mold-related illness, are dealing with some of the mycotoxin effects, even if those mycotoxins might be gone. You know, that they're genotoxic, they're immunotoxic, they're toxic to the organs of detoxification and the gut lining. So we have this entire milieu of symptoms that are happening. And
that's could you expand our definition of mycotoxins, by the way, spelled M-Y-C-O, toxins. I think that's a really important concept, and it really helps us advance beyond a limited understanding of how people react to mold.
Yeah, so mycotoxins, I'll back up a little. Every living mold that's happily metabolizing and has a food source and a moisture source, and that's key. It doesn't have to be a flood. It can just be too high of moisture. So if they're happily chunking along there, that's the mold factory, so to speak, and they're pumping out these chemicals of happily living mold. So they're pumping out microbial VOCs, aldehydes, alcohols, and then they have their cellular fragments.
So these are gaseous substances. They're invisible. Do they smell musty? Can you tell that you're being exposed to these things necessarily?
These guys may smell musty if they're exposed to the indoor air, but if they're trapped behind building material, you won't necessarily have a nose hit. And then there's these other way more poisonous things called mycotoxins. And the mycotoxins are made in a competitive advantage. Molds are very territorial. So once a mold spore finds that perfect place, like what I refer to in my book is lakefront property, we think of it as a big blob of water, but all it has to be is moisture. And that's really hard to wrap your head around, that wow, just moisture in the air can do this. So if a mold finds that perfect place and another mold spore or bacteria wants to come in and also live there, it will start gas bombing those neighboring microbes to defend its territory and its kind, so to speak. And we are not really their target, because this is microscopic.
We're just collateral damage.
Exactly. Yep. But if you think about what those mycotoxins are designed for, they're designed to kill all other living things. And that can happen to us. These mycotoxins are cytotoxic. They're meaning cellularly toxic. And that can affect every cell in our body. There are some specific things about them. They're lipophilic, which means they're fat soluble. And as a regular human, when you hear fat soluble, you're thinking love handles or big booty or those kind of things. But as a practitioner, a medically trained practitioner, we know what that means. That means, you know, all of the fatty, lipid-rich tissues in our body, which means brain and nervous system, bone marrow, immune system, all the organs of our immune system, the spleen, the thymus. And that starts to now, oh yeah, the gut lining, oh my goodness, lymph tissues. And so you can start to see kind of why I'm trying to expand that definition to be bigger than just allergy, because now we're dealing with something that could infuse into every cell lining of every cell in our body.
And so what are the range of symptoms that you might experience? And, you know, that maybe, you know, we may not actually have time to enumerate that.
Yeah. There, and that's the hard thing, is it can look different in every single person. It depends on the amount of dose, the type of mycotoxins that you're exposed to, your particular personal susceptibility, which might be genetic or nutritional or previous exposures. It could have to do with gender and body fat status. So it can be lots of different things. But in general, we're going to see some level of fatigue, and it might be too bedbound. You know, from that's the most extreme, or it might just be a competitive athlete that's not able to hit their VO2 max. So it can be anywhere in between, but something where there's a marked difference in a fatigue level. I also see anxiousness, or I'm careful not to say anxiety, because We think it's not an anxiety disorder, and it may not even be apparent on the outside that someone that's looking nervous, not at all. It's an internal feeling of unsettled, unrest. I don't feel safe in the world. Something's wrong. And people will just describe it as being having just a general sense of unrest in the inside.
It's as if it triggers an alarm in the body, and it's hard for people to tune into the source of that. There's just a sense of malaise.
Yeah, and unsafety. And so people will often, people around the mold sick person will see them kind of pin that anxiety or anxious feeling on things in their life that make sense, because this is a hidden problem. It's a microscopic problem. You know, mold, it can often exist and you don't even see it because it's trapped behind building materials. But the mycotoxins, they're affecting the brain without really seeing the tiger. So people will start to kind of go look for tigers that aren't really there. So people around them will say, why is that person so worried about finances? They're fine. Why is that person so worried about, you know, their kids, something, something, you know, fill in the blank. They become really cautious about foods and start to have histamine reactions and all these things that are related to the brain really getting rewired to be constantly threat watching, you know, watching around for the threats in the environment.
Can mold sensitivity make you more allergic in general, or make you multiply chemically sensitive? Can it have a spreading effect?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the idea is a total load. So if you're exposed to an indoor environment that's affected by water damage or that is hosting toxic molds, you're being exposed to all those chemicals I was talking about, the MVOCs, the aldehydes, alcohols. So that loads up your organs of detoxification. And then the mycotoxins are potent detox. They're toxic to the liver, the kidneys. They're really tough on the gut. So of course now our ability to detoxify those toxins themselves, the mycotoxins, but also all the other things that the happily living mold is spitting out. So we see an increase in chemical sensitivity, an increase in like food sensitivities. People get a headache, you know, because they can't follow a car too close, or they get a headache, or they can't go into the aisle at the grocery store or all this stuff. Yeah, the detergent aisle, that's right. So all of a sudden those little things, they can't burn candles anymore, and they start to kind of clean up the things that they have control over, when really what needs to be happening, I mean, that's wonderful, but is to clean up the hidden mold problem.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. Naturally occurring black pigments in vegetables, spices, and seeds have been found to have powerful anti-inflammatory effects. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I'm excited about what I think may be the next big thing in anti-inflammatory supplements, a brand new, all-natural, daily preventative against a host of possible inflammatory issues. Black for Health liquid extract from Future Farm Botanicals. Black for Health combines four plant-based foods, black garlic, black radish root, black cumin seed, and black peppercorn, containing high levels of body-ready healing botanicals. It's a tasty supplement with liposome complex for optimal absorption. For more information, order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's myfuturefarm, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. And from now until September 15th, buy one bottle of Black for Health. You get one bottle of elderberry with zinc and echinacea half off at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Thanks for listening, and thanks for allowing us to share some of our sponsors' information. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Dr. Jill Krista. Well, you boil this complex process into a five-step action plan. And, you know, I'll just recite the steps and maybe we can go into them a little bit. There's a lot of detail here. You know, you certainly want to read the book. It is likely that if you have a complex mold problem, you'll need to access the help of a health professional, in addition to a professional remediator. And I think you point that out in the book, but the book is a wonderful guide to how that process might look. And so it's five steps: avoidance, obviously, fundamental, which is, you know, we'll get into protect, repair, and fight. And I noticed that you actually say fight at the very end. So what's the risk of going too fast? You know, say you diagnose somebody having a mold problem and you say, look, you've got fungal overgrowth in your body and your sinuses. So we're going to give you, Diflucan, fluconazole, some kind of powerful medication to knock it out. You think that's a bad idea?
Well, I learned that the hard way. I learned that by making patients sicker. Getting really into it, once I figured out it was mold, and then I developed a questionnaire for myself in clinic to sort of determine the Lyme versus the mold picture. And then, so when people would take the mold questionnaire and score a probable mold illness.
By the way, the mold questionnaire is in the book and it's excellent. So you can take the mold test.
And that
will help you. I mean, look, it's an art. It's not rocket science. There's not like one single easy, simple test, like the COVID-19, PCR test or something to diagnose this with. But there are a series of signs and symptoms that if you have them, it's likely that you should consider mold. And then there are blood tests. We'll talk a little bit about blood tests, stool tests, and so on. But go ahead.
Yeah. So if any clinician is listening and wants a copy of the questionnaire, a PDF version that you can use in clinic, you can go to my website, drkrista.com/questionnaire.
That's very generous.
So you don't have to buy the book. And if anybody wants that, and lay people that are listening or regular old people, there's an easier online quiz called moldquiz.com. So if you're just curious, if you're listening to us talking, this is me. Now I kind of lost track of your question. Oh, why don't we go to antifungals right away?
So what's the risk?
I did that and I made patients much worse. And it turns out when I dug back into the research to say, okay, what went wrong there? We have seen in studies that when you expose aspergillus, for example, was done in the study, expose it to antifungals, and in this case it was amphotericin B, it will actually kick up its production of mycotoxins in defense of itself. So again, going back to the beginning, realizing that mycotoxins are formed in a competitive way, that starts to make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So once the mold knows you're coming for it, it's going to fight back.
It's kind of like attacking a wasp nest or something.
Yeah.
It's like they just come out at you and you got to run.
That is a great analogy. That's exactly it. Yeah, I call it don't poke the bear, but yeah, I think a wasp nest is actually a better example.
Yeah.
Once you start, you have to be ready for everything that's going to come back at you. And it's interesting that I actually see in my practice, I've noticed it as a trend, and now I'm starting to talk with other doctors about it. I thought I was just kind of kooky, but other people are seeing it, that when you start to clean up mold in the environment, the body mold starts to act more aggressively.
Hmm.
It's almost like they're pheromone talking to each other. It's really interesting. So some people, we have to kind of move through those steps a little quicker if they're starting to have bad reactions from their house getting cleaned up.
Now there's something about mold that is utterly fascinating, which kind of harkens back to, invasion of the pod people or Night of the Living Dead or something like that. It's almost as if the mold commandeers us to do its bidding. And when I first heard that theory, I said, that's a wackadoodle theory, because people want to absolve themselves of personal responsibility for eating a lot of junk food and eating a lot of sugar. Some people come in and they say that the candida did it to me. I know my candida is worse because I'm eating more sugar now. I go, well, that's why your candida is worse, eating more sugar. It's like, they got the egg before the chicken. But actually, there is something to this notion that in a very primitive way, these organisms parasitize us and commandeer us to do their bidding in a way. It sounds bizarre, but explain that.
Yeah. And that's, again, just something that I observed through practice and then developed a theory. And that theory was sort of, I don't want to say confirmed, but there was more support of that theory after a couple studies were done on treating nasal biofilm, and that these mold sick people would get better, people with chronic fatigue syndrome and that kind of thing. And after I started treating the sinus biofilm along with the systemic, I was treating, along the five steps. When I would get to fight, that would mean antifungals, which could mean herbs, or it could mean food, or it could mean medication, or a combination thereof. And so when I was treating that, that was sort of a systemic treatment. And I know Dr. Shoemaker's protocol is to hit Marcon's sinusy, you know, sinually, if that's a term. So I was treating Marcon's when I would find it, but really didn't have the intranasal part as part of the protocol until I started to develop this theory that there it is seems to be sort of a continuum when you're exposed to water damage building, that the first thing is that you're exposed to spores if they're there and fragments if they're there, which causes an inflammatory reaction. But if they're not, if those aren't floating around in the air and the mycotoxins are getting through, the first reaction is mycotoxin detox. So the body might have, you might walk into a moldy building if you're healthy and walk out and then the next day have diarrhea because your body just says, oof, we got to get rid of that. That was bad. Mm-hmm. And then as you go along that continuum, those mycotoxins start to set off a protective effect in your sinus microbiome and your gut microbiome that says, hey, wait a minute, I think we're trying to be invaded. And so what do microbes do? They defend their territory with toxins. So you start to get mycotoxins and endotoxins from the fungus and the bacteria on your mucus lining, and that eventually causes immune deficiency, and then you can have literally you become the sick building, mm-hmm. and that leaves an opportunity for the species in that building to move into you. And we've now seen, you know, situations of people, not chemo patients, not HIV patients, but mm-hmm. regular old people with some degree of immune deficiency, we're seeing stachybotrys in their tissues.
Oh my goodness.
And we're seeing, I mean, that wasn't really understood that that was even possible.
So, okay, so what we're saying, just to be clear, is that these mold spores and mycotoxins, two different things, come from an external environment that, you know, sometimes is very, the exposure is very insidious. We're not aware that we're exposed. But simultaneously and somewhat synergistically, we can develop an overgrowth of yeast or aspergillus in our intestinal tracts, in our nasal passages, even in our lungs. And these pathogens conspire with one another to colonize us and make us sick. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And affect our behavior, like you were saying about the candida, you know, that they can actually affect how we behave. And what I see is that people will become more sedentary. They'll become more isolated. They stay inside more. And if you think about what the mold is trying to do is compost you, you know, mm-hmm. so that's, you're making its job easier if you stay put.
But also it selects for the kind of food that is conducive to its growth. So
yes.
People with this problem have a predilection for carbs and sweets, yeah?
Yes, yep, and alcohol and fermented foods and all kinds of things that will help. And so that's part of the fundamentals is to get people off the foods that are going to, that either are mold spores, you know, if in the fungal family, like mushrooms, things that commonly are contaminated by mycotoxins. And then the third thing is things that will actually feed the fungal burden in the body. Because mm-hmm. along that continuum, that's what happens is the end of that continuum is you become fungally burdened.
So these days, you know, we think very highly of mushroom extracts. These are products that are immune stimulating, you know, reishi mushrooms and lion's mane and things like that, cordyceps. But in the context of mold sensitivity, it's possible that they can cross-react and become an allergen. It's not as if they will start to grow in your body because they're basically extracts, but they're fragments of basically mold, yeah?
Right, yeah. And what the way that I see it, and again, I learned this by making people sicker. I love medicinal mushrooms, so people mm-hmm. think I have a thing against them, but I actually use them in my I have a practitioner course that I certify mold literate doctors. At the end of the protocol is something called mycoremediation, where we use medicinal mushrooms to restore the immune function and genetic function of the immune system. Hmm. So they're incredibly powerful. But the question is it kind of a hair of the dog question? So, you know, are we using it then for those kind of beta glucans can be very triggering for mm-hmm. people when they're actively exposed to mold.
Yeah, they're immune stimulating and they may actually amp up the body's own adverse reactions to mold. So
yeah, And so they may, and that's a key word. I'm glad you used that word because some people feel better taking their mushrooms. But in general, again, when you write a book for the public, I had to do the bell curve. You know, the majority of the patients that I was seeing, when we would take them off medicinal mushrooms, they actually had less aggravation of their symptoms. And I think it's that thing of like, the message is fungus wants to come in and move in and take over. So if you have more fungus dietarily, supplementally, that's going to further trigger the body.
And we talk a lot about fermented food as being beneficial for restoration of the microbiome. In this context, maybe not so much, and they may also increase histamine reactions, which is part and parcel of the body's reaction to molds.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, let's pause because there's a lot of information here, and we can't possibly encapsulate all the information that you've imparted in your book, Break the Mold, Five Tools to Conquer Mold and Take Back Your Health. There's a wonderful questionnaire in there that will help our listeners discern whether they're likely to be exposed to mold. And we'll talk a little bit about the repair and remediation process in part two, testing for mold exposure, talk a little bit about genetic susceptibility, optimal diet for mold, and so on. We'll be right back. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.